Chapter 6. I should have relished the weird romantic experience, but I was as busy as Eliza crossing the ice, and the things snapping at my heels were worse than bloodhounds. I wanted to look back, but I was too busy trying to stay on my feet. I couldn't see my feet. I had to watch ahead and try to pick my footing. It kept me as busy as a lumberjack in a log rolling contest. I didn't skid, as the ground was rough. Dust or fine sand over raw rock, and 50 pounds weight was enough for footing. But I had 300 pounds mass, not a whit reduced by lowered weight. This does things to lifelong reflex habits. I had to lean heavily for the slightest turn, lean back and dig in to slow down, lean far forward to speed up. I could have drawn a force diagram, but doing it is another matter. How long does it take a baby to learn to walk? This newborn moon baby was having to learn while making a forced march, half blind, at the greatest speed he could manage. So I didn't have time to dwell on the wonder of it all. Pee-wee moved into a brisk pace and kept stepping it up. Every little while my leash tightened and I tried still harder to speed up and not fall down. The mother thing warbled at my spine.
Are you all right, Kip? You seem worried.
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm very comfortable. Don't wear yourself out, dear.
Okay. Oscar was doing his job. I began to sweat from exertion and naked sun, but I didn't kick the chin valve until I saw from my blood color gauge that I was short on air. The system worked perfectly, and the joints, under a 4-pound pressure, gave no trouble. Hours of practice in the pasture was paying off. Presently, my one worry was to keep a sharp eye for rocks and ruts. We were into those low hills maybe 20 minutes after H hour. Pee-wee's first swerve as we reached rougher ground took me by surprise. I almost fell. She slowed down and crept forward into a gulch. A few moments later, she stopped. I joined her, and she touched helmets with me.
How are you doing?
Okay.
Mother thing, can you hear me?
Yes, dear.
Are you comfortable? Can you breathe all right?
Yes, indeed. Our Kip is taking good care of me.
Good. You behave yourself, Mother thing. Hear me?
I will, dear.
Somehow she put an indulgent chuckle into a bird song. Speaking of breathing, I said to Pee-wee, let's check your air. I tried to look into her helmet. She pulled away, then touched again.
I'm all right.
So you say. I held her helmet with both hands, found I couldn't see the dials. With sunlight around us, trying to see in was like peering into a well. What does it read? And don't fib.
Don't be nosy.
I turned her around and read her bottle gauges. One read 0. The other was almost full. I touched helmets. Pee-wee. How many miles have we come?
About 3, I think. Why?
Then we've got more than 30 to go?
At least 35. Kip, quit fretting. I know I've got one empty bottle. I shifted to the full one before we stopped.
One bottle won't take you 35 miles.
Yes, it will. Because it's got to.
Look, we've got plenty of air. I'll figure a way to get it to you. My mind was trotting in circles, thinking what tools were on my belt, what else I had.
Kip, you know you can't hook those spare bottles to my suit, so shut up!
What's the trouble, darlings? Why are you quarreling?
We aren't fighting, Mother Thing. Kip is a worrywart.
Now, children.
Pee-wee, I admit I can't hook the spares into your suit, but I'll jigger a way to recharge your bottle.
But how, Kip?
Leave it to me. I'll touch only the empty. If it doesn't work, we're no worse off. If it does, we've got it made.
How long will it take?
10 minutes with luck. 30 without.
No.
Now, Pee-wee, don't be silly.
I'm not being silly. We aren't safe until we get into the mountains. I can get that far. Then, when we no longer show up like a bug on a plate, we can rest and recharge my empty bottle.
It made sense. All right.
Can you go faster? If we reach the mountains before they miss us, I don't think they'll ever find us. If we don't...
I can go faster, except for these pesky bottles.
Oh.
She hesitated.
Do you want to throw one away?
Huh? Oh, no, no. But they throw me off balance. I've just missed a tumble a dozen times. Pee-wee, can you retie them so they don't swing?
Oh, sure.
I had them hung around my neck and down my front. Not smart, but I had been hurried. Now Pee-wee lashed them firmly, still in front as my own bottles and the mother thing were on my back. No doubt she was finding it as crowded as Dollar Day. Pee-wee passed clothesline under my belt and around the yoke. She touched helmets.
I hope that's okay.
Did you tie a square knot? She pulled her helmet away. A minute later, she touched helmets again.
It was a granny,
she admitted in a small voice.
But it's a square knot now.
Good. Tuck the ends in my belt so that I can't trip. Then we'll mush. Are you all right?
Yes. I just wish I had salvaged my gum. Old and tired as it was, my throat's awful dry.
Drink some water. Not too much.
Kip, it's not a nice joke.
I stared. Pee-wee, your suit hasn't any water?
What? Don't be silly.
My jaw dropped. But baby, I said helplessly, why didn't you fill your tank before we left?
What are you talking about? Does your suit have a water tank?
I couldn't answer. Pee-wee's suit was for tourists, for those scenic walks amidst incomparable grandeur on the ancient face of the moon that the ads promised. Guided walks, of course, not over a half hour at a time. They wouldn't put in a water tank. Some tourist might choke or bite the nipple off and half drown in his helmet or some silly thing. Besides, it was cheaper. I began to worry about other shortcomings that cheap jack equipment might have, with Pee-wee's life depending on it. I'm sorry, I said humbly. Look, I'll try to figure out some way to get water to you.
I doubt if you can. I can't die of thirst in the time it'll take us to get there, so quit worrying. I'm all right. I just wish I had my bubble gum. Ready?
Ready. The hills were hardly more than giant folds in lava. We were soon through them, even though we had to take it cautiously over the very rough ground. Beyond them, the ground looked flatter than western Kansas, stretching out to a close horizon, with mountains sticking up beyond, glaring in the sun, and silhouetted against a black sky like cardboard cutouts. I tried to figure how far the horizon was, on a 1,000-mile radius and a height of eye of 6 feet. And couldn't do it in my head, and wished for my slipstick. But it was awfully close, less than a mile. Pee-wee let me overtake her, touched helmets.
Okay, Kip. All right, mother thing?
Sure.
All right, dear.
Kip, the course from the pass when they fetched me here was east, 8 degrees north. I heard them arguing and sneaked a peer at their map. So, we go back west, 8 degrees south. That doesn't count the jog to these hills, but it's close enough to find the pass, okay?
Sounds swell. I was impressed. Pee-wee, were you an Indian scout once? Or Davy Crockett?
Pooh, anybody can read a map.
She sounded pleased.
I want to check compasses. What bearing do you have on Earth?
I said silently, Oscar, you've let me down. I've been cussing her suit for not having water, and you don't have a compass. Oscar protested.
Hey, pal, that's unfair. Why would I need a compass at Space Station 2? Nobody told me I was going to the moon.
I said, Pee-wee, this suit is for space station work. What use is a compass in space? Nobody told me I was going to the moon.
But, well, don't stop to cry about it. You can get your directions by Earth.
Why can't I use your compass?
Don't be silly. It's built into my helmet. Now, just a moment.
She faced Earth, moved her helmet back and forth. Then she touched helmets again.
Earth is smack on northwest. That makes the course 53 degrees left of there. Try to pick it out. Earth is 2 degrees wide, you know.
I knew that before you were born.
No doubt. Some people require a head start.
Smart Aleck.
You were rude first.
But, sorry, Pee-wee. Let's save the fights for later. I'll spot you the first two bites.
I won't need them. You don't know how nasty I can.
I have some idea.
Children, children.
I'm sorry, Pee-wee.
So am I. I'm Edgy. I wish we were there.
So do I. Let me figure the course. I counted degrees using Earth as a yardstick. I marked the place by eye, then tried again, judging 53 degrees as a proportion of 90. The results didn't agree, so I tried to spot some stars to help me. They say you can see stars from the moon, even when the sun is in the sky. Well, you can, but not easily. I had the sun over my shoulder, but was facing Earth, almost three-quarters full, and had the dazzling ground glare as well. The polarizer cut down the glare, and cut out the stars, too. So I split my guesses and marked the spot. Pee-wee, see that sharp peak with sort of a chin on its left profile? That ought to be the course, pretty near.
Let me check.
She tried it by compass, then touched helmets.
Nice going, Kip. 3 degrees to the right and you've got it.
I felt smug. Shall we get moving?
Right. We go through the pass, then Tomba Station is due west.
It was about 10 miles to the mountains. We made short work of it. You can make time on the moon if it is flat, and if you can keep your balance. Pee-wee kept stepping it up until we were almost flying. Long, low strides that covered ground like an ostrich, and, do you know, it's easier fast than slow. The only hazard, after I got the hang of it, was landing on a rock or hole or something, and tripping. But that was hazard enough because I couldn't pick my footing at that speed. I wasn't afraid of falling. I felt certain that Oscar could take the punishment. But suppose I landed on my back? Probably smashed the mother thing to jelly. I was worried about Pee-wee, too. That cut-rate tourist suit wasn't as rugged as Oscar. I've read about explosive decompression. I never want to see it, especially not a little girl. But I didn't dare use radio to warn her, even though we were probably shielded from Wormface, and if I tugged on my leash, I might make her fall. The plane started to rise, and Pee-wee let it slow us down. Presently we were walking, then we were climbing a scree slope. I stumbled but landed on my hands and got up. 1/6 gravity has advantages as well as hazards. We reached the top and Pee-wee led us into a pocket in the rocks. She stopped and touched helmets.
Anybody home? You two all right?
All right, dear.
Sure. A little winded, maybe. That was an understatement, but if Pee-wee could take it, I could.
We can rest and take it easy from here on. I wanted to get us out of the open as fast as possible. They'll never find us here.
I thought she was right. A Wormface ship flying over might spot us if they could see down as well as up. Probably just a matter of touching a control. But our chances were better now. This is the time to recharge your empty bottle.
Okay.
None too soon. The bottle, which had been almost full, had dropped by a third, more like half. She couldn't make it to Tomboss Station on that. Simple arithmetic. So I crossed my fingers and got to work. Partner, will you untie this cat's cradle? While Pee-wee fumbled at knots, I started to take a drink, then stopped, ashamed of myself. Pee-wee must be chewing her tongue to work up saliva by now, and I hadn't been able to think of any way to get water to her. The tank was inside my helmet, and there was no way to reach it without making me, and Mother Thing, dead in the process. If I ever lived to be an engineer, I'd correct that. I decided that it was idiotic not to drink because she couldn't. The lives of all of us might depend on my staying in the best condition I could manage. So I drank and ate 3 malted milk tablets and a salt tablet, then had another drink. It helped a lot, but I hoped Pee-wee hadn't noticed. She was busy unwinding clothesline. Anyhow, it was hard to see into a helmet. I took Pee-wee's empty bottle off her back, making darn sure to close her outside stop valve first. There's supposed to be a one-way valve where an air hose enters a helmet, but I no longer trusted her suit. It might have more cost-saving shortcomings. I laid the empty on the ground by a full one, looked at, straightened up, and touched helmets. Pee-wee, disconnect the bottle on the left side of my back.
Why, Kip?
Who's doing this job? I had a reason, but was afraid she might argue. My left-hand bottle held pure oxygen. The others were oxyhelium. It was full, except for a few minutes of fiddling last night in Centerville. Since I couldn't possibly give her bottle a full charge, the next best thing was to give her a half charge of straight oxygen. She shut up and removed it. I set about trying to transfer pressure between bottles whose connections didn't match. There was no way to do it properly, short of tools a quarter of a million miles away, or over in Tombaugh Station, which was just as bad. But I did have adhesive tape. Oscar's manual called for 2 first aid kits. I didn't know what was supposed to be in them. The manual had simply given USAF stock numbers. I hadn't been able to guess what would be useful in an outside kit. A hypodermic needle, maybe? Sharp enough to stab through and give a man morphine when he needed it terribly? But since I didn't know, I had stocked inside and outside with bandage, dressings, and a spool of surgical tape. I was betting on the tape. I butted the mismatched hose connections together, tore off a scrap of bandage, and wrapped it around the junction. I didn't want sticky stuff on the joint. It could foul the operation on a suit. Then I taped the junction, wrapping tightly, working very painstakingly, and taping 3 inches on each side, as well as around the joint. If tape could restrain that pressure a few moments, there would still be one deuce of a force trying to drag that joint apart. I didn't want it to pull apart at the first jolt. I used the entire roll. I motioned Pee-wee to touch helmets. I'm about to open the full bottle. The valve on the empty is already open. When you see me start to close the valve on the full one, you close the other one, fast. Got it?
Close the valve when you do, quickly. Roger.
Stand by. Get your hand on the valve. I grabbed that lump of bandaged joint in one fist, squeezed as hard as I could, and put my other hand on the valve. If that joint let go, maybe my hand would go with it. But if the stunt failed, little Pee-wee didn't have long to live, so I really gripped. Watching both gauges, I barely cracked the valve. The hose quivered. The needle gauge that read empty twitched. I opened the valve wide. One needle swung left, the other right. Quickly they approached half charge. Now! I yelled uselessly and started closing the valve, and felt that patchwork joint start to give. The hoses squeezed out of my fist, but we lost only a fraction of gas. I found that I was trying to close a valve that was closed tight. Pee-wee had hers closed. The gauges each showed just short of half full. There was air for Pee-wee. I sighed and found I had been holding my breath. Pee-wee put her helmet against mine and said very soberly,
"Thanks, Kip."
"Charton Drug Service, ma'am. No tip necessary. Let me tidy this mess. You can tie me and we'll go."
"You won't have to carry but one extra bottle now."
"Wrong, Pee-wee. We may do this stunt 5 or 6 times until there's only a whisper left. Or until the tape wears out," I added to myself. The first thing I did was to rewrap the tape on its spool, and if you think that is easy, wearing gloves and with the adhesive drying out as fast as you wind it, try it. In spite of the bandage, sticky stuff had smeared the connections when the hoses parted, but it dried so hard that it chipped off the bayonet and snap joint easily. I didn't worry about the screw thread joint. I didn't expect to use it on a suit. We mounted Pee-wee's recharged bottle, and I warned her that it was straight oxygen. "Cut your pressure and feed from both bottles. What's your blood color reading?"
"I've been carrying it low on purpose."
"Idiot! You want to keel over? Kick your chin valve. Get into normal range." We mounted one bottle I had swiped on my back, tied the other in the oxy bottle on my front, and were on our way. Earth mountains are predictable. Lunar mountains aren't. They've never been shaped by water. We came to a hole too steep to go down other than by rope, and a wall beyond I wasn't sure we could climb. With pitons and snap rings and no spacesuits, it wouldn't have been hard in the Rockies, but not the way we were. Pee-wee reluctantly led us back. The scree slope was worse going down. I backed down on hands and knees, with Pee-wee belaying the line above me. I wanted to be a hero and belay for her. We had a brisk argument.
"Oh, quit being big and male and gallantly stupid, Kip. You've got 4 big bottles and the mother thing and you're top heavy and I climb like a goat."
I shut up. At the bottom, she touched helmets.
"Kip, I don't know what to do."
"What's the trouble?"
"I kept a little south of where the crawler came through. I wanted to avoid crossing right where the crawler crossed. But I'm beginning to think there isn't any other way."
"I wish you had told me before."
"But I didn't want them to find us. The way the crawler came is the first place they'll look.
Yes. I looked up at the range that blocked us. In pictures, the mountains of the moon look high and sharp and rugged. Framed by the lens of a spacesuit, they look simply impossible. I touched helmets again. We might find another way, if we had time and air and the resources of a major expedition. We've got to take the route the crawler did. Which way?
A little way north, I think.
We tried to work north along the foothills, but it was slow and difficult. Finally, we backed off to the edge of the plain. It made us jumpy, but it was a chance we had to take. We walked, briskly, but not running, for we didn't dare miss the crawler's tracks. I counted paces, and when I reached 1,000, I tugged the line. Pee-wee stopped and we touched helmets. We've come half a mile. How much farther do you think it is? Or could it possibly be behind us? Pee-wee looked up at the mountains.
I don't know. Everything looks different.
We're lost?
It ought to be ahead somewhere. But we've come pretty far. Do you want to turn around?
Pee-wee, I don't even know the way to the post office.
But what should we do?
I think we ought to keep going until you are absolutely certain the pass can't be any farther. You watch for the pass, and I'll watch for crawler tracks. Then, when you're certain that we've come too far, we'll turn back. We can't afford to make short casts like a dog trying to pick up a rabbit's scent.
All right.
I had counted 2,000 more paces, another mile, when Pee-wee stopped.
Kip, it can't be ahead of us. The mountains are higher and solider than ever.
You're sure? Think hard. Better to go another 5 miles than to stop too short. She hesitated. She had her face pushed up close to her lens while we touched helmets, and I could see her frown. Finally, she said,
It's not up ahead, Kip.
That settles it. To the rear, march! Lay on, Macduff, and cursed be him who first cries, Hold enough!
King Lear.
Macbeth. Want to bet? Those tracks were only half a mile behind us. I had missed them. They were on bare rock, with only the lightest covering of dust. The sun had been over my shoulder when we first crossed them, and the caterpillar tread marks hardly showed. I almost missed them going back. They led off the plain and straight up into the mountains. We couldn't possibly have crossed those mountains without following the crawler's trail. Pee-wee had had the optimism of a child. It wasn't a road. It was just something a crawler on caterpillar treads could travel. We saw places that even a crawler hadn't been able to go until whoever pioneered it set a whopping big blast, backed off, and waited for a chunk of mountain to get out of the way. I doubt if Skinny and Fatty carved that goat's path. They didn't look fond of hard work. Probably one of the exploration parties. If Pee-wee and I had attempted to break a new trail, we'd be there yet, relics for tourists of future generations. But where a tread vehicle can go, a man can climb. It was no picnic. It was trudge, 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 up and up and up. Watch for loose rock, and mind where you put your feet. Sometimes we belayed with the line. Nevertheless, it was mostly just tedious. When Pee-wee had used that half charge of oxygen, we stopped and I equalized pressure again, this time being able to give her only a quarter charge, like Achilles and the tortoise. I could go on indefinitely, giving her half of what was left, if the tape held out. It was in bad shape, but the pressure was only half as great, and I managed to keep the hoses together until we closed valves. I should say that I had it fairly easy. I had water, food, pills, dexedrine. The last was enormous help. Anytime I felt fagged, I borrowed energy with a pep pill. Poor Pee-wee had nothing but air and courage. She didn't even have the cooling I had. Since she was on a richer mix, one bottle being pure oxygen, it did not take as much flow to keep up her blood color index, and I warned her not to use a bit more than necessary. She could not afford air for cooling. She had to save it to breathe.
I know, Kip. I've got the needle jiggling the red light right now. Think I'm a fool?
I just want to keep you alive.
All right, but quit treating me as a child. You put one foot in front of the other, I'll make it.
Sure you will. As for the mother thing, she always said she was all right, and she was breathing the air I had, a trifle used, but I didn't know what was hardship to her. Hanging by his heels all day would kill a man. To a bat, it is a nice rest, yet bats are our cousins. I talked with her as we climbed. It didn't matter what. Her songs had the effect on me that it has to have your own gang cheering. Poor Pee-wee didn't even have that comfort, except when we stopped and touched helmets. We still weren't using radio. Even in the mountains, we were fearful of attracting attention. We stopped again, and I gave Pee-wee 1/8 of a charge. The tape was in very poor shape afterwards. I doubted if it would serve again. I said,
Pee-wee, why don't you run your oxyhelium bottle dry while I carry this one? It'll save your strength.
I'm all right.
Well, you won't use air so fast with a lighter load.
You have to have your arms free. Suppose you slip.
Pee-wee, I won't carry it in my arms. My right-hand backpack bottle is empty. I'll chuck it. Help me make the change, and I'll still be carrying only 4, just balanced evenly.
Sure, I'll help, but I'll carry 2 bottles. Honest, Kip, the weight isn't anything, but if I run the oxyhelium bottle dry, what would I breathe while you're giving me my next charge?
I didn't want to tell her that I had doubts about another charge, even in those ever smaller amounts. Okay, Pee-wee. She changed bottles for me. We threw the dead one down a black hole and went on. I don't know how far we climbed nor how long. I know that it seemed like days, though it couldn't have been, not on that much air. During mile after mile of trail, we climbed at least 8,000 feet. Heights are hard to guess, but I've seen mountains I knew the heights of. Look it up yourself. The first range east of Tomball Station. There's a lot of climbing, even at 1/6 G. It seemed endless, because I didn't know how far it was, nor how long it had been. We both had watches under our suits. A helmet ought to have a built-in watch. I should have read Greenwich time from the face of Earth, but I had no experience, and most of the time I couldn't see Earth because we were deep in mountains. Anyhow, I didn't know what time it had been when we left the ship. Another thing spacesuits should have is rear-view mirrors. While you are at it, add a window at the chin so that you can see where you step. But of the two, I would take a rear-view mirror. You can't glance behind you. You have to turn your entire body. Every few seconds I wanted to see if they were following us, and I couldn't spare the effort. All that nightmare trek, I kept imagining them on my heels, expecting a wormy hand on my shoulder. I listened for footsteps, which couldn't be heard in vacuum anyhow. When you buy a spacesuit, make them equip it with a rearview mirror. You won't have worm face on your trail, but it's upsetting to have even your best friend sneak up behind you. Yes, and if you are coming to the moon, bring a sunshade. Oscar was doing his best, and York had done an honest job on the air conditioning, but the untempered sun is hotter than you would believe, and I didn't dare use air just for cooling, any more than Pee-wee could. It got hot, and stayed hot, and sweat ran down, and I itched all over, and couldn't scratch, and sweat got into my eyes, and burned. Pee-wee must have been parboiled. Even when the trail wound through deep gorges lighted only by reflection off the far wall, so dark that we turned on headlamps, I still was hot, and when we curved back into naked sunshine, it was almost unbearable. The temptation to kick the chin valve, let air pour in and cool me, was almost too much. The desire to be cool seemed more important than the need to breathe an hour hence. If I had been alone, I might have done it, and died. But Pee-wee was worse off than I was. If she could stand it, I had to. I had wondered how we could be so lost, so close to human habitation, and how crawly monsters could hide a base only 40 miles from Tomball Station. Well, I had time to think, and could figure it out because I could see the moon around me. Compared with the moon, the Arctic is swarming with people. The moon's area is about equal to Asia, with fewer people than Centerville. It might be a century before anyone explored that plain where Wormface was based. A rocket ship passing over wouldn't notice anything, even if camouflage hadn't been used. A man in a spacesuit would never go there. A man in a crawler would find their base only by accident, even if he took the pass we were in and ranged around that plain. The lunar mapping satellite could photograph it and re-photograph. Then a technician in London might note a tiny difference on 2 films. Maybe. Years later, somebody might check up. If there wasn't something more urgent to do in a pioneer outpost where everything is new and urgent. As for radar sightings, there were unexplained radar sightings before I was born.
Wormface could sit there, as close to Tomball Station as Dallas is to Fort Worth, and not fret, snug as a snake under a house. Too many square miles, not enough people. Too incredibly many square miles. Our whole world was harsh, bright cliffs, and dark shadows, and black sky, and endless putting one foot in front of the other. But eventually, we were going downhill oftener than up, and at weary last, we came to a turn where we could see out over a hot, bright plain. There were mountains awfully far away, even from our height, up 1,000 feet or so. They were beyond the horizon. I looked out over that plain, too dead beat to feel triumphant, then glanced at Earth and tried to estimate due west. Pee-wee touched her helmet to mine.
There it is, Kip.
Where? She pointed, and I caught a glint on a silvery dome. The mother thing trilled at my spine.
What is it, children?
Tomball Station, mother thing. Her answer was wordless assurance that we were good children, and that she had known that we could do it. The station may have been 10 miles away. Distances were hard to judge. What with that funny horizon, and never anything for comparison, I didn't even know how big the dome was. Pee-wee, do we dare use radio? She turned and looked back. I did also. We were about as alone as could be.
Let's risk it.
What frequency?
Same as before. Space operations, I think.
So I tried. Tomball Station! Come in, Tomball Station! Do you read me? Then Pee-wee tried. I listened up and down the band I was equipped for. No luck. I shifted to horn antenna, aiming at the glint of light. No answer. We're wasting time, Pee-wee. Let's start slogging. She turned slowly away. I could feel her disappointment. I had trembled with eagerness myself. I caught up with her and touched helmets. Don't let it throw you, Pee-wee. They can't listen all day for us to call. We see it. Now we'll walk it.
I know.
As we started down, we lost sight of Tomball Station, not only from twists and turns, but because we dropped it below the horizon. I kept calling as long as there seemed any hope, then shut it off to save breath and battery. We were about halfway down the outer slope when Pee-wee slowed and stopped, sank to the ground, and sat still. I hurried to her. Pee-wee!
Kip, could you go get somebody? Please? You know the way now. I'll wait here. Please, Kip?
Pee-wee! Get up! You've got to keep moving!
I can't!
She began to cry.
I'm so thirsty! And my legs!
She passed out. Pee-wee! I shook her shoulder. You can't quit now! Mother thing, you tell her! Her eyelids fluttered. Keep telling her, mother thing! I flopped Pee-wee over and got to work. Hypoxia hits as fast as a jab on the button. I didn't need to see her blood color index to know it read danger, the gauges on her bottles told me. The oxygen bottles showed empty. The oxyhelium tank was practically so. I closed her exhaust valves, overrode her chin valve with the outside valve, and let what was left in the oxyhelium bottle flow into her suit. When it started to swell, I cut back the flow and barely cracked one exhaust valve. Not until then did I close stop valves and remove the empty bottle. I found myself balked by a ridiculous thing. Pee-wee had tied me too well. I couldn't reach the knot. I could feel it with my left hand, but couldn't get my right hand around. The bottle on my front was in the way, and I couldn't work the knot loose with one hand. I made myself stop panicking. My knife. Of course, my knife. It was an old scout knife with a loop to hang it from a belt, which was where it was. But the map hooks on Oscar's belt were large for it, and I had had to force it on. I twisted it until the loop broke. Then I couldn't get the little blade open. Spacesuit gauntlets don't have thumbnails. I said to myself, Kip, quit running in circles. This is easy. All you have to do is open a knife. And you've got to, because Pee-wee is suffocating. I looked around for a sliver of rock, anything that could pinch hit for a thumbnail. Then I checked my belt. The prospector's hammer did it. The chisel end of the head was sharp enough to open the blade. I cut the clothesline away. I was still blocked, I wanted very badly to get at a bottle on my back. When I had thrown away that empty and put the last fresh one on my back, I had started feeding from it and saved the almost half charge in the other one. I meant to save it for a rainy day and split it with Pee-wee. Now was the time. She was out of air. I was practically so in one bottle, but still had that half charge in the other, plus an eighth of a charge or less in the bottle that contained straight oxygen, the best I could hope for in equalizing pressures. I had planned to surprise her with a one-quarter charge of oxyhelium, which would last longer and give more cooling. A real knight-errant plan, I thought. I didn't waste 2 seconds discarding it. I couldn't get that bottle off my back! Maybe if I hadn't modified the backpack for non-regulation bottles, I could have done it. The manual says, reach over your shoulder with the opposite arm, close stop valves at bottle and helmet, disconnect the shackle. My pack didn't have shackles. I had substituted straps. But I still don't think you can reach over your shoulder in a pressurized suit and do anything effective. I think that was written by a man at a desk. Maybe he had seen it done under favorable conditions. Maybe he had done it, but was one of those freaks who can dislocate both shoulders. But I'll bet a full charge of oxygen that the riggers around Space Station 2 did it for each other, as Pee-wee and I had, or went inside and deflated. If I ever get a chance, I'll change that. Everything you have to do in a spacesuit should be arranged to do in front. Valves, shackles, everything, even if it is to affect something in back. We aren't like Wormface, with eyes all around and arms that bend in a dozen places. We're built to work in front of us. That goes triple in a spacesuit. You need a chin window to let you see what you're doing, too. A thing can look fine on paper and be utterly crummy in the field. But I didn't waste time moaning. I had a 1/8 charge of oxygen I could reach. I grabbed it. That poor, overworked adhesive tape was a sorry mess. I didn't bother with bandage. If I could get the tape to stick at all, I'd be happy. I handled it as carefully as gold leaf, trying to get it tight, and stopped in the middle to close Pee-wee's exhaust entirely when it looked as if her suit was collapsing. I finished with trembling fingers. I didn't have Pee-wee to close a valve. I simply gripped that haywire joint in one hand, opened Pee-wee's empty bottle with the other, swung over fast, and opened the oxygen bottle wide, jerked my hand across, and grabbed the valve of Pee-wee's bottle, and watched those gauges. The two needles moved toward each other. When they slowed down, I started closing her bottle, and the taped joint blew out. I got that valve closed in a hurry. I didn't lose much gas from Pee-wee's bottle, but what was left on the supply side leaked away. I didn't stop to worry. I peeled away a scrap of adhesive, made sure the bayonet and snap joint was clean, got that slightly recharged bottle back on Pee-wee's suit, opened stop valves. Her suit started to distend. I opened one exhaust valve a crack and touched helmets.
Pee-wee! Pee-wee! Can you hear me? Wake up, baby! Mother thing, make her wake up! Pee-wee!
Yes, Kip?
Wake up! On your feet, champ! Get up! Honey, please get up!
Huh? Help me get my helmet off. I can't breathe!
Yes, you can! Kick your chin valve! Feel it! Taste it! Fresh air!
She tried, feebly. I gave her a quick, strong shot, overriding her chin valve from outside.
Oh!
See? You've got air! You've got lots of air! Now get up!
Oh, please just let me lie here.
No, you don't! You're a nasty, mean, spoiled little brat. And if you don't get up, nobody will love you. The Mother Thing won't love you. Mother Thing, tell her.
Stand up, daughter.
Pee-wee tried. I helped her once she was trying. She trembled and clung to me, and I kept her from falling.
Mother Thing?
She said faintly.
I did it. You still love me?
Yes, darling.
I'm dizzy, and I don't think I can walk.
You don't have to, honey, I said gently, and picked her up in my arms. You don't have to walk any farther. She didn't weigh anything. The trail disappeared when we were down out of the foothills, but the crawler's tracks were sharp in the dust and led due west. I had my air trimmed down until the needle of the blood color indicator hung at the edge of the danger sector. I held it there, kicking my chin valve only when it swung past into danger. I figured that the designer must have left some leeway, the way they do with gasoline gauges. I had long since warned Pee-wee never to take her eyes off her own indicator and hold it at the danger limit. She promised, and I kept reminding her. I pressed her helmet against the yoke of mine so that we could talk. I counted paces, and every half mile I told Pee-wee to call Tomboss Station. It was over the horizon, but they might have a high mast that could see a long way. The mother thing talked to her, too, anything to keep her from slipping away again. It saved my strength to have the mother thing talk, and was good for all of us. After a while, I noticed that my needle had drifted into the red again. I kicked the valve and waited. Nothing happened. I kicked it again, and the needle drifted slowly toward the white. How you fixed for air, Pee-wee?
Just fine, Kip. Just fine.
Oscar was yelling at me. I blinked and noticed that my shadow had disappeared. It had been stretched out ahead at an angle to the tracks. The tracks were there, but my shadow was not. That made me sore, so I turned around and looked for it. It was behind me. The darn thing had been hiding. Games!
That's better,
said Oscar. It's hot in here, Oscar.
You think it's cool out here? Keep your eye on that shadow, bud, and on those tracks.
All right, all right. Quit pestering me. I made up my mind that I wouldn't let that shadow get away again. Games it wanted to play, huh? There's darn little air in here, Oscar.
Breathe shallow, chum. We can make it.
I'm breathing my socks now.
So, breathe your shirt.
Did I see a ship pass over?
How should I know? You're the one with the blinkers.
Don't get smart. I'm in no mood to joke. I was sitting on the ground with Pee-wee across my knees, and Oscar was really shouting, and so was the mother thing.
Get up, you big ape! Get up and try!
Get up, Kip, dear. Only a little way now.
I just want to get my wind.
All right, you've got it. Call Tomboss Station,
I said. Pee-wee, call Tomboss Station. She didn't answer. That scared me, and I snapped out of it. Tomboss Station, come in, come in! I got to my knees, and then to my feet. Tomboss Station, do you read me? Help! Help! A voice answered.
I read you.
Help! Medea! I've got a little girl dying! Help! Suddenly it sprang up in front of my eyes. Great shiny domes, tall towers, radio telescopes, a giant Schmidt camera. I staggered toward it. Mayday! An enormous lock opened and a crawler came toward me. A voice in my phone said,
We're coming. Stay where you are. Over and out.
A crawler stopped near me. A man got out, came over, and touched helmets. I gasped. Help me get her inside. I got back.
You've given me trouble, bub. I don't like people who give me trouble.
A bigger, fatter man got out behind him. The smaller man raised a thing like a camera and aimed it at me. That was the last I knew.